We made this.
You're listening to Free With This Month's Issue. As always, please support the bands and artists featured in each episode by buying their records and going to their gigs. Each episode we'll be adding all available tracks to our ongoing Spotify playlist, which you can find on WeDidPodcast.com. You can also find our other episodes and podcasts there. If you want to agree with us, or more likely argue with us, or even appear in a future episode, you can find us on Twitter at This Month's Issue and Facebook at Free With This Month's Issue. Also, if you enjoy the podcast, then let people know. Like, subscribe, review it on iTunes, tattoo it on your forehead, etc. Right, let's get on with it then. Hello, welcome to Free With This Month's Issue, which might confuse some of you if you're listening to it on the Kerrang Back Issues feed. This is a colossal crossover event.
Colossal.
With the, yeah, well, the tape's called Colossal, so that was, right. You know, fresh in my mind. So this is a Free With This Month's Issue and Kerrang Back Issues crossover event bonus episode. So for those of you that don't already listen to Free With This Month's Issue, I'm Colin. And the other person that you've just heard speaking was Ian. Hello, Ian.
Hello.
What we do each month is we have a different guest to talk to us about an old free CD or free tape from magazines like Kerrang, Metal Hammer, NME, Melody Maker, and basically sort of go through it and find the horrors and delights within. I've already kind of given away who we've got with us, but Ian, who is our guest this evening?
Yes, anyone that was concerned that we'd completely annex Steve's channel, we have not. We have, in fact, just got Stephen of Kerrang Back Issues on this issue. Shock horror, drum roll. Bet you didn't see that coming, did you? Not exactly sixth sense, is it, Twist Boys?
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me on.
So, Stephen, do you want to tell the people that listen to Free With This Month's Issue and haven't listened to Kerrang Back Issues yet what you do each week?
I started it at the start of January this year. And what I do is I go through an issue of Kerrang that coincides with that week, but obviously 27 years ago in 94. So as the week of recording this, we're doing November 19th, 1994. Yeah, all I do, I basically just go through the magazine, pull out the fun stuff, read some of the interesting stuff. I try and put my own spin on it if I can. I try and remain impartial when I can, but sometimes it's difficult.
There's some bits where you really can't, can you?
I mean, there's some stuff that's happened this year. Like one thing that comes to mind immediately was Paradise Lost talking about how some of their roadies were getting it on with some like really young underage girls.
Yeah.
And I remember like reading that one out and I was like, I really have to put a caveat in here because this is really like not cool. I mean, obviously it's really, really like bad and really, I don't know. I feel like was it okay then? I don't think it was okay then, but it seemed like it was more acceptable.
Yeah.
It's really strange.
Yeah, and stuff got talked about then that you really fucking wouldn't now, definitely.
No. Yeah. And actually, I find it funnily enough as well, while we're talking about that weird stuff, the first episode that I did January last year, there was a review of a Gary Glitter Christmas concert.
Yes.
Wow.
Just something that wouldn't... I mean, you know, at the time, he was just a bit of a, you know, strange, you know, glam guy. But... now we all know different, don't we?
You couldn't even imagine, though, now, thinking about it, that even if he wasn't a horrific paedophile, you couldn't imagine Gary Glitter being in Kerrang.
It's strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think there was a massive change in about 1995, which is when I started reading Kerrang, where at the moment they have things like Pink Floyd in there and stuff like that, which I love Pink Floyd, but I could never have thought of them as a Kerrang band.
No.
But not at all. I mean, I love Pink Floyd, but like seeing them in Kerrang is just a bit strange. You just don't expect to see them in there. It's really, really odd. So I feel like we've started off on a really like serious topic immediately, trying to keep it lighthearted, and we've gone straight into
it won't last. Absolutely won't.
Straight into prolific nonsense. It's not good, is it? We need to move away from this.
Never a good plan. So, Stephen, what was your history with Music Magazine? When did you start getting them? What sort of thing did you get?
So, my first Music Magazine was Kerrang. I guess I was about... the first one I bought was the first one that I did, which was January, whatever it was, at the start of this year, 94. So I was 13 when I bought that. I think the only reason I bought it was because Guns N' Roses were on the cover. And actually, no, I think I was 12. Sorry, not 13. Anyway... Guns N' Roses were on the cover. They were my absolute favourite band at the time. I bought a magazine and I ended up just buying it every week after that. And you know what it's like? You sort of slowly get into this thing where you start reading about more bands and then you start buying records. Well, not that many, because you've only got pocket money. But it just sort of snowballed. And I pretty much bought a copy of Kerrang, I'd say, for about the next 5 or 6 years weekly.
Yeah.
And I never threw a copy away, which is really weird. My dad wanted me to throw them away pretty much every time I went home. And he's like, will you get rid of those Kerrangs? Because they're in their garage. And I was like, no, I'm going to keep them. You know, I think, you know, they're nice to go back and have a look at.
In the future, I'll do a podcast where I read them each week.
Who saw that come in? I mean, you know, a pandemic is basically the reason I started this podcast. Because, yeah, I was just having a bit of a rough time. And I knew that I had all these old Kerrangs. And I was back at my parents' for Christmas. I was like, actually, I think I need to do something good with these.
Yeah.
I had an idea to like maybe scan them and put them online, but that's a bit boring. I was like, do you know what? I think I'm gonna talk about it. And yeah, it just kind of blossomed from there, really.
Yeah, and it's like we've kind of got like the Kerrang cinematic universe with us talking about the CDs, you talking about the magazines, and then you've got Rachel from Mosher Mags putting them on Instagram and things like that as well.
Yeah,
it's like we are the Avengers of Kerrang.
Oh, it's brilliant, isn't it? Like Instagram is so fun. Just looking at what people are like digging up and finding, it's really like, I think you said, I listened to the Rachel from Mosher Mags one the other day. I think you said something about she was putting up pictures that were like from your memory.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you said that, and that's just so true. Like going on Instagram and seeing this stuff, I'm like, wow, like that really is just this. Yeah, there's so many things that are taking me back. It's brilliant. I'm really loving it. A little bit of nostalgia, it doesn't hurt anyone.
It's great. So what is the cassette that we're talking about this week then?
So the cassette, I did have a copy of it. I don't know where it is at the moment, but it's a Music for Nations cassette with 5 bands on it.
Kerrang obviously absolutely obsessed with the letter K at this point.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Until they realised that maybe scoring things 3 out of 5 just using K's probably doesn't look brilliant.
Yeah.
So this is the Colossal Complimentary Cassette, all with K's, which is a Music for Nations sampler. Unlike all the other episodes that we've done so far, it's only got 5 tracks on it. Because quite often, in the early to mid-90s, you did get quite short tapes with the magazines. Yeah. It was only sort of later on that they started getting sort of full length. It's more like an EP at this point. So this was, as we said, from 19th of November 1994. So I'll just give a bit of context for the time. It's exactly the same month as the Q magazine CD we did with Mike Dryborough in August last year. So even when we did that, the music news was a little bit patchy and not much available. So David Crosby undergoes a 7-hour liver transplant operation. Kelly deals
liver arrest. Transplant.
Yeah, sometimes I can't speak. David Crosby undergoes a 7-hour liver transplant, not lizard transplant operation. Kelly Deal from The Breeders is arrested for heroin possession, and original Bad Brains frontman HR rejoins the band and they sign to Madonna's Maverick Records. Albums released, Unplugged in New York by Nirvana, Amorica by the Black Crowes, Euthanasia by Megadeth, Woodstock 94, which was the first CD I ever bought, Tickow by Method Man, Vitalogy by Pearl Jam, and Mighty Morphin Power Rangers the album, A Rock Adventure by Ron Wasserman.
Wow.
Which I didn't pick up on last time that we did the list of those albums. On tour, obviously this is a Kerrang-centric one, The Almighty, Melvins, Head Swim, Obituary with Napalm Death and Pitch Shifter, which is a fucking great lineup. Meatloaf and Stone Temple Pilots, not on the same bill, that'd be weird. UK number one single was Pato Banton with Baby Come Back, and the album was Bon Jovi's Crossroad, which had just knocked off Reel to Reel and the Mad Stuntman off number one. In the magazine, well, I normally talk a bit about what was in the magazine, but that's the whole point of Stephen's podcast. So I'm just going to mention a couple of random things. And for more of that, if you're on the Kerrang Back Issues feed at the moment, you've already heard it. And if you're on the Free With This Month's Issue feed, go and subscribe to Kerrang Back Issues. It's got the Black Crowes on the cover, Paradise Lost in the studio recording Draconian Times, and Getting a Stomach Bug from Jason Arnop. There's a Sleaze Rock special with Demolition 23, Degeneration and UK Decay. And there's reviews of Pearl Jam's Vitalogy, Smashing Pumpkins' Pisces Iscariot, and Henry Rollins getting the van spoken word.
I've just got to say, I haven't gone back and read it yet, but I'm already angry with the Vitology review because I saw how many Ks they give it. Not happy at all. Not happy. No.
It's not my favourite Pearl Jam album, it's got to be said, but no, it's more than 3Ks.
It's more than 3Ks, yeah. Four absolute minimum. Out of interest, what's your favourite Pearl Jam album?
Versus, I think.
Okay. Yeah, it's a good shout.
Yeah.
I have no strong feelings.
Also a good shout.
Just recorded a We Dig Music episode on 1993, so Rearview Mirror was on that. That's me and Ian's other podcast that'll be out next week. Right, so shall we get into it then? Let's start listening to the CD. It's not a CD. Let's start
it's
listening to the cassette. It's only the second tape we've ever done. So, yeah, let's start listening to the tape. So this is Warrior Soul and The Drug. So we talked about Warrior Soul a little bit on the episode with Rachel from Mosher Mags a few months back. They're one of the bands Kerrang used to bang on about absolutely loads.
They pushed them so fucking hard.
Yeah.
Like, there's a singer like Corey Clark?
Corey Clark, I believe.
Corey Clark.
Yes.
He was all over Kerrang for about 3 years. He was everywhere. Yeah. They loved him so much. It was so strange.
For no fucking good reason.
We were amazed because he was still getting mentioned in 2011. I think they'd reformed. But they were a band that I had never knowingly heard before now. And this isn't as bad as I thought it was going to be honest.
Oh, Jesus, really?
I thought it was all right. I that riff's cool, and I like the way the bass sort of changed the chord underneath
it. It's a good job you like that riff because it goes on for fucking months.
It does, that is true. The vocals, his vocals remind me of Andy Wood from Mother Love Bone a bit, on Stardog Champion. It's that kind of sort of glam kind of tone.
Yeah,
I'm getting that, definitely.
And also, it's got the absolutely hilarious lyric, "The walls start shaking, your heart goes boom, boom, your head is breaking, and time goes zoom, zoom."
Yeah, he's not a lyrical genius, is he?
I'm so glad you pulled that out, because I pulled out those four lines and wrote them down as well, because I absolutely love it. It's so stupid.
It really is.
So stupid. See, I don't hate this song. I think listening to it, it definitely took me back to listening to this tape, so there probably is a little bit of nostalgia with it. It's just a bit... I'm surprised they're from New York, because they just sound very much like a sleazy LA kind of post Guns N' Roses sort of rock and roll kind of band. It's a bit throwaway, isn't it, really?
It's very New York Dolls influence, but definitely via Guns N' Roses. Yeah, I don't think they would have existed. So, shall we go for the next song?
Sure.
Let's do it.
So this is Apes, Pigs and Spacemen, and Do I Need This? I didn't have this tape because it was 6 months before I started reading Kerrang, so this is the one track that I knew, although not this version. The version on Transfusion, their debut album, is a bit slower and a little bit heavier. It's brilliant. I fucking love it.
Yeah.
I always thought with a bigger budget behind Apes, Pigs and Spacemen, I mean, particularly if they got a push in America, they could have been maybe as big as Bush, but possibly not, because Paul Miro isn't quite as good looking as Gavin Rossdale.
Is anyone?
They're still going, you know.
I think they're reformed.
There's no listed break in there.
Okay. I know Paul Miro was doing a lot of solo stuff because he's played with friends of friends of mine around Bristol. My mate James Buckingham, there's a guitarist that he used to do a lot of gigs with, who also did a lot of gigs with Paul Miro.
But no, their wiki looks like they've just carried on going.
Ah, I know they've definitely put out albums within the last 10 years, because that's what's on Spotify. Unfortunately, Transfusion isn't on there, so I'll have to dig my CD out.
I think the song's great. Honestly, I think this is possibly the best song on the tape.
I think easily. Yeah.
I don't think they've got that much competition, if I'm being honest. But I tell you what, I was really disappointed. I actually, in Kerrang, they talk about what the song's actually about. See, I thought the song was about maybe like missing the bus in the morning or burning the toast or something. And you think to yourself, oh, God, I don't need this, do I? But according to Kerrang, according to Paul Miro, this song is an observation of public apathy, how we've grown desensitized to the constant media barrage of war, famine, abuse, corruption and exploitation. I wanted to depict an individual whose vision has become clouded by indifference, the kind of man who wouldn't go on strike and risk being blacklisted, his conscience has surrendered to self-interest. So, I preferred it when it's about toast, if I'm honest.
Yeah,
it's a bit deep.
I thought it was about waking up with a hangover every day, but I think that's just because of the second verse where he's talking about out of my face again, can't tell why everybody's leaving.
Yeah.
But then I don't drink, so I haven't really got that perspective. I just assume that
sometimes it's best to not have the singer / songwriter's explanation. Every time I've tried to explain my songwriting process to someone, they've looked at me like, all right, wanker. So, and which is why I don't do it that often. So I feel like maybe everyone should be of a similar mind.
I was absolutely blown away. So I went to see Guns N' Roses when they played the Olympic Stadium the other year, and I was on the train up, and there was a guy in an Apes, Pigs and Spacemen shirt.
Wow.
And I almost went up to him and I was like, Jesus Christ, I can't believe you're wearing that shirt, because that's the one of those bands that you would have to have bought the shirt at that time, and they're not going to be on Etsy or Depop or anything like that.
No.
Like, that's not a band that's... Yeah, that's, yeah, it's really strange.
Are you sure it wasn't really... Paul Morrow?
It could have been.
Yeah,
I could have been a member of the band for sure.
Etsy and Depop with old T-shirts terrifies me. The amount of old T-shirts I don't have anymore, which apparently are worth like £600, is horrible.
Yeah, I haven't even dared to look.
Oh, don't! I gave black bags full of T-shirts to charity shops.
Yep.
And yeah, I kept a few. There was a few that I kept. Like a Fear Factory obsolete long sleeve, because it was just too good. And like a Sepultura Chaos AD shirt, which I think is one of those ones that's worth about like £500 or something stupid.
Yeah.
But it's one of those weird, I don't know what it was about shirts in the 90s. It was an extra large, because obviously you wore everything baggy.
Yeah.
But it wasn't long. It was just really wide, like a tent.
That's my memory of them as well.
Because I was thinking, like, you know, I'm quite tall, so I'm 6'4", and I was thinking, you know, yeah, I could wear that now, like over like a long sleeve T-shirt or something. But it would actually like stop at my belly, and it'd be like a weird crop top. And I'm like, nah, I can't, no chance.
This is the thing; they're all long on me, just very, very tight.
Around that point, I became like really obsessive about, like, I always had to have a long sleeve tied around my waist as well, because all of my shirts were just slightly too short.
Yeah, I remember that thing. Yeah.
Cool. I've got a question. Do you think, we were talking about how Apes, Pigs and Spacemen should have been big. Do you think they didn't get anywhere because their name is so shit?
Potentially, yeah. It's not a great name, is it?
It is possible. I kind of like it, but that's because we've known it for like 27 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they rechristened themselves APNS, didn't they? And
yes.
So if even you have changed your name, you've got no fucking faith in it, have you?
Yeah. I wonder if that was their decision or a record label going, no. Call it APNS.
But that fucking guitar. That guitar, I feel like that guitar has been fairly pivotal in the way I play guitar.
Yeah?
Yeah. It just sounds like it's just a dirgy, bendy, slidey, drop D sounding riff. And that is very
the opening riff, do you mean?
Yeah.
It's very Helmet. It's very like sounds very like drop D, yeah. It sounds very like Helmet-y, sludgy kind of. I mean, Helmet are not sludge band, but you know what I mean. It's that sort of,
it's that crunch, it's kind of grindiness.
Yeah. Ace. Right, let's go downhill then.
All right.
Side two. this is Demolition 23 and Nothing's All Right. Demolition 23 is Michael Munro, Nasty Suicide and Sam Yaffa. So it's three-fifths of Hanoi Rocks. Obviously, Razzle, the drummer, got killed in the car that Vince Neil was driving when he was absolutely off his face.
Yep.
And they obviously possibly just didn't like the other guitarist, whose name I've completely blanked on.
Oh, well.
This is way better than anything I've ever heard Hanoi Rocks do. But, I mean, that's not saying that much.
Low bar.
It is a low bar.
Shit Rancid, though.
Well, it's basically New York Dolls with a heavy dose of the Stooges on there, mainly because there is a total rip-off of the riff from Search and Destroy in the main riff there. But it's not groundbreaking, but it's fun.
I'm just annoyed. I'm really annoyed because this album got 4Ks in Kerrang, so they're saying that this album is 1K better than Vitology. No chance. I'm not having it. Also, Nasty Suicide is the greatest name for a guitarist that's ever. It's better than Buckethead. Like, Nasty Suicide is incredible.
Yeah,
I love that name.
That is a good name. Go with that.
Just looked up, it's Paul Rees that did the Vitalogy review, so that's who you're going to take it up with.
Who reviewed Demolition 23 then?
Oh, I'm going to.
I was going to say, is that the same issue?
No, that was 519, so that was about one or two back, I think.
So I haven't got that with me. Right, let's go for the next track.
Yeah.
So this is Freak of Nature and Enemy. It's quite telling that three-fifths of the bands on this tape are new bands at the time, obviously, from people who had been in fairly big bands previously. So obviously the last one was Hanoi Rocks. The next one, spoilers, we've got ex-members of Twisted Sister. This one, it makes a really big thing about the other two, but makes absolutely no mention in the write-up in the magazine that vocalist Mike Tramp and bassist Jerry Best were both members of 80s soft rock hair band White Lion. And that's probably for the best, because White Lion were utterly fucking shit.
I never heard them, actually.
These guys aren't much better, though, are they?
This is a lot more Kerrang-friendly than White Lion. White Lion were, like, the softest of soft rock. They're the band that Beavis and Butthead would have been, you know, like Winger taking the piss out of the whole time, whereas I could see Beavis and Butthead quite liking this. I quite like that riff. That Descendi riff's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Do you mean the one in the chorus?
Yeah, yeah.
That riff is an exact rip-off of Down the River by Alice in Chains.
That's why I
like
it.
I had to listen to Alice in Chains. Yeah, that's exactly
why
I liked it as well.
You're right.
I'm like, it's just Alice in Chains.
I knew it sounded familiar. You are fucking right.
Yeah.
Right, I'm going to listen to Dirt when we finish.
Yeah. To cleanse the ears. Yeah, it's probably a good idea. Yeah, I don't hate that song. This album was reviewed in Kerrang earlier on this year and it got 5Ks. Don't get me started on that Vitology again. I'm not going to mention it. There's no way this album is 2Ks better than Vitology. But I actually, because it got 5Ks, I was like, right, I'm going to go give it a listen. And I've listened to the album quite a few times and it's not that bad, actually. It's kind of forgettable in parts, yeah. But as like a sort of 90s... alternative rock, Alice in Chainsy kind of like, call it, yeah, it's not bad. You know what? It's not bad. It's not terrible.
Yeah,
it's not something I'm gonna go out and buy, but you know, it's okay.
What are your thoughts?
But that's
on
the
this?
Problem, isn't it? It's just okay.
Yeah,
it's just like
that's
okay.
That's it. It's just you definitely have heard it played in clubs and been like, like the hair metal room in Eddie's. Would have been, you know.
Yeah. I never went in there.
Sometimes it was fun. Sometimes it was this.
I was just about to say, isn't it funny that all of these hair metal bands started new bands to do a sort of grunge thing, and Motley Crue just came out and just did a straight grunge album.
Yes.
Like, without changing their name or doing anything different, and it absolutely bombed and everyone hated it.
Yeah.
Weird way to go. Very weird.
It's all marketing, isn't it?
Yeah, always is.
Right, let's go for the next song. The last one. This is the shortest episode we've ever done by a long way.
Yeah.
this is Widowmaker and Long Gone. So this is Dee Snider, obviously best known for Twisted Sister, who predated all of the other bands and their previous bands on this tape so far, but somehow sounds like the most modern band on the entire tape.
Well, I mean, that's like Al Petrelli, the guitarist, is like pretty much the key to that, I would imagine.
What else was he in?
Hilariously, he got his first gig playing on a Michael Bolton single. But after that, he was in Savatage, who were pretty
okay,
pretty decent.
Yeah, yeah.
And plays in Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Then after that, Megadeth.
Okay, fair enough.
For a couple of years as well.
Pretty good pedigree then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's definitely, like Stephen was saying a minute ago about the last track being a rip-off of Alice in Chains, they've definitely heard Wicked Garden by Stone Temple Pilots for that main riff, because it's totally stolen. But I like it. I think that this is, after Apes, Pig and Spaceman, this is the next best song.
Yeah, I think those would have been the two songs that I really listened to, and if I listened to the other ones, it's because I couldn't be bothered to fast-forward the tape.
It was definitely a lot heavier than I was expecting. When you put the name Dee Snider there, you just immediately think of Twisted Sister, and I just think, I want to rock. And I just think everything he does is just going to be hair metal, and it was hard to get away from that. But hearing that, I was like, oh, actually, like, that bass line at the start's really filthy, the riffs are quite good. It's like, nice, you know.
There was a point when he was trying to be like a serious person, wasn't it, though? Like, he was doing, I think he did radio and he was doing some film stuff as well. Like, I think he tried to reinvent himself as Dee Snider from Twisted Sister.
Well, even in the 80s, he deserved a lot of respect, because have you ever seen the video of him in the PMRC trial?
No.
Where he went, he was absolutely fucking amazing. He basically went up and testified in front of Congress when Tipper Gore and the Parents Music Resource Centre basically wanted to ban all offensive music. And it was basically Dee Snider and Frank Zappa that the entire defence case rested on. And they, other than the parental advisory stickers getting put on, they managed to, it's essentially a victory. They did really well, so I got a lot of respect for him for that.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Didn't he also, he did an industrial project sort of in the late 90s, early 2000s, I think, as well.
It's not listed on his...
I might be getting it confused. I know he was definitely did a horror film where his character was called Captain Howdy, which was nicked out of The Exorcist. But all I remember about that is a review in Kerrang with some of those dudes where they stick the hooks in their back and sort of like hang from the ceiling.
Wrote a song for Celine Dion.
Wow.
The Magic of Christmas Day, brackets, God Bless Us Everyone.
Amazing.
Oh my God. Jesus.
Yeah.
That's metal as fuck.
At the later that year, his horror film Strangeland came out.
That's it, Strangeland. I think it might be the soundtrack that I'm thinking of that was quite industrial on that, perhaps. Yeah. Might not have been him actually involved on it. Might have just been the film. I think I'm also getting confused with Rob Halford's 2 project.
The soundtrack was fucking banging, actually. Got Seven Dust, Megadeth, Pantera, Anthrax, Snot, Cold Chain. It was very nu metal, was what it was.
Yeah.
Very nu metal.
I don't know if you've seen the Twisted Sister documentary. It's called We Are Twisted Fucking Sister. It was on Netflix, but they've taken it off, and it is incredible. It's such an amazing watch. And that's one of the reasons I really like Dee Snider, because they put in about 10 years of work just playing dives in New York and Long Island until they got signed. And it's just incredible. Like, most other bands would have like given up by then, but they just kept on going and kept on going and kept on going. And wow, that film's, that's brilliant. That is a brilliant film.
Yeah. It's like, loads of respect for him. I'm still not going to put on a Twisted Sister album very often.
Nah.
Yeah, like, there's no denying his awesomeness as a person, but...
But this track's ace. I really liked it.
He's like a more metal Dave Grohl, isn't he? He's clearly a cool dude, but I just can't be arsed listening to his music. Sorry, Dee.
Dee Grohl.
Sorry. Yeah, it's just, you know, musicians whose name begins with D, apparently.
Apart from Devin.
Yes.
So what I think this tape sort of represents, it really sort of illustrated for me that there was like a massive shift in rock, metal and punk from 1995 onwards. So this is the first ever Kerrang free cassette. The next one, which was in June the following year, had Cathedral, Paradise Lost, Pitch Shifter and My Dying Bride.
Yep.
Which is way more exciting a lineup. At this point in Kerrang, you'd still got Skin and Thunder getting mentioned pretty much every week, which just totally seems... It seems like the 80s to me, even though it's not, it's the early 90s.
Well, and like, yeah, because like, Skin weren't actually... Like, they'd formed round about that point.
Yeah, that's but the they thing. Seem like the 80s. It's like the 80s hadn't quite finished yet. And it's like, you can't imagine anything sounding like Astro Creep 2000 or Demanufacture or Adrenaline. But no. The next year, all of those records came out.
I think as a tape, it's quite strange, isn't it? I know that it's a Music for Nations tape. But yeah. When you think about all of the bands and albums that came out in 94... And if this is like what it's representing, 1994, for me, it doesn't represent it at all.
No.
It's a bit of a weird like mishmash of bands. I mean, most of them didn't really do anything. I mean, none of them really like did anything and got huge.
Yeah.
It's just a bit strange, isn't it? It's a bit of a weird one.
It's very strange.
I guess it must be more of a label sampler than anything. Like it's
yeah, definitely.
Nations being like, hey, yeah. We've got some stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, prior to this, Kerrang had flexi discs in the 80s and early 90s every now and again.
Yeah.
But this was the first tape that they had. And then, obviously, later on, they moved on to CDs in 97 onwards.
I found a huge box of Kerrang flexi discs in my local charity shop recently, but they wanted $2.99 for each one.
What?
So I was like, Jesus, no thanks. I mean, flexi discs are crap. You play them twice and that's it. They basically just don't work anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a shame, really. Because if they were knocking them out for 50p, I would have bought all of them. But
yeah.
I mean, they had like a box full of them.
I've collected every Kerrang cassette and nearly all of the CDs that they'd ever put out. I think I've got about six to go, I think, for the CDs. And I haven't started on the flexi disc yet and I'm probably not going to.
Yeah. I could have got them all for you. Could have got you in one go, but it would have cost you about 50 quid.
I'd imagine they're probably still there for that price.
Actually, I think last time I went in, they were gone.
Fair enough.
So someone's bought them.
Maybe someone has a rival podcast out there. A rival podcast for sure.
The bastards. but yeah, it's really weird because, I mean, so far in Kerrang, Korn have only had one mention, I think. At this point,
yeah.
And it was just in yep. In the American news bit, wasn't it? In the Mayhem
yeah.
USA.
Yeah, that's it.
And
I mean, new metal so spelled NU completely... doesn't exist yet.
Not yet. I'm really interested to see when the first appearance of that is.
You know who did exist in '94, though?
Me.
POD.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
They was
really.
Yeah, I was just looking at their. Like albums released in 94 and I was like, wait, what?
I'd imagine they probably sounded a little bit less nu metal but still quite rap metally, like Rage Against the Machine influence at that point.
Yeah, maybe.
But Rage Against the Devil Machine or something.
Yeah, they loved a bit of Jesus, didn't they?
Big did Jesus indeed. Fans. Yeah. And they were fucking shite.
Oh, they were so bad. I think I saw them once supporting Korn.
Yeah.
And they were bad. They were really bad. Yeah. I mean, they weren't as bad as I accidentally saw... Oh, God, what that band that had the song Butterfly.
Crazy Town.
Oh, my God, you saw Crazy Town.
I saw them, by accident. They were supporting 1 Minute Silence at the LA 2. Yeah, and Crazy Town were the first band on. I mean, and I remember them coming on stage.
Imagine that, right? And Crazy Town's egos must have been... Must have been fucked by that gig.
It was. I mean, I remember him coming on stage and the singer announced, he's like, yo, what's up? My name's Shifty Shellshock. And I remember just looking at my mates and just crying, laughing. I was like, what did he just say? Jesus Christ.
Don't forget that his co-singer was called Epic Masur.
Oh my God.
It might well have been Masur, but I always remember it as Masur, and then he was just really good.
I hope their guitarist was Nasty Suicide. He would have been great in that band.
I think. Oh, I'm gonna Google it now because I'm pretty sure they'd all got dickhead names. Right, here we go. Well, it's just normal names.
Oh, that's disappointing.
Seth Binzer, Rick Dixon.
Dick Rickson as well. Rick Dixon and Dick Rickson you need.
Hazmat Angelino, Roland Banks. Yeah, no, it's just got their proper names. Like Brett Mazur is Epic Mazur.
That's rubbish.
Yeah. Ah, here we go. So Shifty Shellshock is Seth Binzer.
Right.
Then Rick Dixon is actually, his stage name is Rick One. Elias Tanaus is E.T.
Well, that's just his initials. That's fucking lazy.
Yep. Epic Masur. Yep. Then there was another Epic. Charles Rust Epic Lopez.
They're running out of ideas, aren't they?
Yep.
Which is obvious from their music.
Craig Squirrel Tyler. Doug Fado Delay Miller.
Oh, yeah, I remember there being Fado Delay.
Adam, DJ Adam 12 Bravin.
And then, do you reckon they'd had another DJ Adam?
DJ AM Goldstein.
I reckon
two DJs called Adam.
Well, I think they'd probably had another 10 before that, if one was Adam 12.
It's a good point. No. 11 before then. They're still going.
I wonder what Crazy Town are doing today. Are they still a band?
Yeah. Upsettingly, yeah. I think
they've done those tours with Headbeard and people.
95
like
to 2003, split up for 4 years and then came back. I think one of them is actually dead. I think Epic Mazur is dead.
That's a shame. He's got an epic name. Right, anyway. Crazy Town didn't exist for about another 8 years.
Yep.
Thank God.
So,
no,
that'll be
1 year. Years active, okay, 95 enough. Onwards.
Fucking hell.
Known as Crazy Town X.
Ooh. Was that the late night version?
Yeah. Where they put shirts on.
Ah, amazing. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the episode. So, Stephen, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Do you want to? This will be completely pointless for the people that are already listening to this on your podcast feed, but do you want to tell the people on our podcast feed where they can find you?
Yeah, so podcasts available on everywhere you'd get your podcasts. If you want to get us on Instagram, we're at Kerrang Back Issues. On Twitter, it's Kerrang Pod. And yeah, come and join us on Instagram. It's really fun over there.
Excellent.
Saying at the start, we have a lot of fun. It's good. It's really good.
It is. I particularly like the continuing sagas in the news section and the letters page. Like earlier, towards the start of the year, it was all about Blaze Bailey leaving Wolfsbane, which, as me and Ian are both from Tamworth, this was particularly of interest to us because. We know most of Wolfsbane.
Yep.
So,
do you really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Sort of hometown claim to fame, them and Julian Cope.
Yep.
So, but me and Ian, free with this month's issue. If you're not already subscribed, you can subscribe by searching Free with This Month's Issue in any podcast provider or Spotify or wherever. And you can find all the previous episodes on WeDigPodcasts.com, along with our other podcast, WeDig Music. And, you can find us on Twitter and stuff like that. Just search, you'll find us. Thanks very much for listening, everyone. We'll be back on our feed next month. And hopefully we'll be back to speak to Stephen again next time there was a Kerrang free tape. So, sometime next year. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Another endearingly shambolic podcast from WeDigPodcasts.com.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
We dig music.
I feel that this is the first song that properly ripped into R. Kelly as well.
Which is amazing.
Wow. Yeah.
Right, so R. Kelly
Bang on time.
Only just been convicted.
Yeah.
The first time I ever heard of R. Kelly was reading Smash Hits. So this is before I'd even started reading Kerrang. So I started getting Kerrang in 95. So this must have been 94.
Yep.
And it was when...
he married Aaliyah, who was Aaliyah, like, what, 14?
Yeah, basically time. Aaliyah had just released her album Age Ain't Nothing But A Number.
The Movie Palace Podcast.
The book I want to tell you about is The Art of American Screen Acting, 1912 to 1960 by Dan Callahan. What I try to do in my movie programs is introduce people to films they haven't seen, and some of these people are younger viewers who haven't watched a lot of classic cinema, especially anything predating Star Wars. They'll often make comments like, "I really like the movie, but the acting back then was pretty awful." The Art of American Screen Acting meets such comments head on.
Observing the Pattern, a Fringe podcast.
So there is a real element of redemption. You know, we talk about William Bell getting redemption in this episode, or redeeming himself for his actions with his sacrifice. But the whole arc of Fringe is in many ways Walter redeeming himself as well, and realising what he's done wrong, for one thing, and realising where he's gone wrong and coming to terms with that. So yeah, this is a very key point, I think, in that whole macro story of Fringe, as well as Walter's character.
Yeah, definitely. And there's also an element that we discussed in a previous episode about the weaponization of children.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.
Hello, everyone. This is Tony, network chief of We Made This. As you know, our podcast network brings together a brilliant assortment of talent who talk about all kinds of pop culture content, such as the episode you've just listened to, or maybe you're just about to listen to. We're not going anywhere, but we'd love to keep the lights on for even longer if you're able to support our network on Patreon. For just £2 a month, you get your name in lights and the satisfaction of knowing you're helping us produce more great audio. And for £3 a month, you'll get your name in lights, but you'll also get access to an exclusive bi-monthly podcast from the We Made This talent pool on podcasting, pop culture, and, well, you tell us. We'll take your suggestions. For less than the price of a coffee per month, you can help keep We Made This going. Just head to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. That's patreon.com/WeMadeThis. And get the ball rolling.